Hello and welcome to this edition of Side Retired, the MLB podcast. It is Dylan, joined alongside James and Jack, as always. And of course, the return of the prodigal son for the first time in about 4 months. Ryan Barry is with us.
It has not been 4 months. It's been like 2 months. But hello. Oh. It's good to be back. I'm glad to be back. I was on it at one point in October.
I do have the date with me of the last episode you were on if you want me to embarrass you. Take a guess. Let's do a little game to begin the show.
I was at school when we did it. October 6th.
Jack, your guess?
I feel like that October date is somehow wrong, but I guess I'll go on October 1st.
It was September 13th, so welcome back, buddy.
I don't think that's true.
Well, anyways, we are back again
today. It's
good
to be back regardless.
We are back today talking about the top 10 first basemen in baseball. If you haven't checked out our catchers episode, that one is now out right below this one. Today is Dylan, James, Jack, and Ryan talking about the first baseman. We're going to do the same format as we did the last time, where we're each going to run down our list and then we're going to break out into individual players. So James, how about today? You go first, give us your list, then we'll go Jack, Ryan, and end with me.
All right, yeah. So I got Ty France at 10, Joey Votto, Brandon Belt, Pete Alonso, Paul Goldschmidt, Yuli Gurriel, Max Muncy, Matt Olson, Freddie Freeman, and then Vladimir Guerrero Jr. rounding out my top 10.
Going from 10 to 1.
Yeah, 10 to 1. Yeah.
Then for me, got Yuli at 10, Ty France 9, Votto at 8, Brandon Belt 7, Pete Alonso at 6, Max Muncy at 5, Paul Goldschmidt at 4, Freddie Freeman at 3, Matt Olson at 2, and Vladdy Guerrero Jr. at the number 1.
For me, starting with 10, I have Yuli Gurriel as well, followed by Rhys Hoskins, Joey Votto, Jose Abreu, Pete Alonso. And then my top 5, which is more concrete than the rest of the list, goes Goldie, Max Muncy, Matt Olson, Freddie Freeman, and Vladito.
And then I had Jared Walsh crashing the party at 10, Joey Votto 9, Yuli Gurriel 8, Jose Abreu 7, Paul Goldschmidt 6, Max Muncy with his injury at 5, Matt Olson at 4, the resident Met fan had Pete Alonso at 3, Vladimir Guerrero at 2, and because of his consistency, Freddie Freeman was at number 1. One of the sort of surprising guys that both James and Jack had on their list, I guess Jack, you can elaborate more on him because you had him higher on the list, is Ty France. And if you are watching on the YouTube, you can see Ty France's stats now appear on your screen. Jack, take it away with him.
I think Ty France, bottom of this list, I think there's a lot of great first basemen, especially with such like a power heavy position. So like there's a lot of good options at bottom of the list. I went with Ty France. He had a good year last year, 368 on base, 445 slugging, 129 OPS plus, 18 home runs in 152 games. So obviously he played a lot. I mean, I think he had an overall good year, 3.5 war. So, I mean, he's a great player, and I think he's a decent bat for the Mariners. Obviously, they just lost Kyle Seager, so he's going to have to step it up to add to their offensive production. But an overall really solid bat and for a position that focuses a lot heavily on the offense.
James, you got anything to add about him?
He had a great year at the plate. He's a solid defender, but, I mean, you know, he hits for average, and he's got a little bit of pop in his bat. So, yeah, I think he's a really good first baseman, and that's why he gets number 10 on my list.
Ryan's number 9 guy on his list, Rhys Hoskins, slipped out of the rest of our list, but I guess he's still a really solid first baseman. Ryan, what made you keep him on your list this year?
Yeah, the reason I have him is because, as Jack said, this is, outside of DH, the most offensive-minded position in all of baseball. So defense isn't really as much of a factor. Speed isn't necessarily much of a factor. You don't often see first basemen stealing many bags, or anybody at all for that matter, anymore in baseball. So I kind of looked for some guys that were really into like hitting for power, not to sound like Brad Pitt from Moneyball or whatever, but he does walk. He has a career 360 on base percentage with a high of 396 in his shortened rookie season. This past season, he had a 334 on base percentage, which, although does not sound that elite compared to his 247 batting average, does show that he does walk quite a bit. In addition, he did have 27 home runs along with 71 RBIs in a shortened season due to injury, which he only played 107 games. So if you kind of extrapolate that, it shows how much power production as well as run production he gives out of the first base position, which I think are the two most important stats in a position that, as I said earlier, is more offensive minded.
One of the guys that was on my list that nobody else had was Jared Walsh. I put him at 10 just because he had a nice rookie season. He made the All-Star team. He never got a full chance with Albert Pujols blocking him in the past two seasons. He finally broke out in 2021. As you can see, he almost hit 30 homers, 100 RBIs in almost a full season. OPS plus was around 128. Obviously, Yankee fans remember him as that guy that hit the grand slam off of Aroldis Chapman, which maybe is the reason we have three Yankee fans with me not putting him on their top 10 list. But in general, is he the flashiest name? No. However, in an Angels lineup with hopefully a bounce back from Trout and Rendon, as well as Shohei Ohtani, next year the Ducks could be set out for Jared Walsh to come out and bounce back in a big way next year.
Yeah, the only reason I didn't have him on my list was because of his defense and because of his inability to hit left-handed pitching almost the entire season. He was really good versus righties, absolutely atrocious versus lefties. So, yeah, that's the only reason I left him off my list.
And as you can see also with the bottom, go for it.
I was just going to say, it is kind of peculiar, though, as well, because Albert Pujols, in his old age, has kind of just become like a lefty crusher. That's what he's known for now. So having that platoon really would have been elite for the Angels. I know his contract obviously wasn't terrific, but keeping him along definitely would have helped in the effort to get Mike Trout and the Angels to playoff first.
So I'll give this question to Jack first because he's going to throw all the advanced analytics and stats at us, and then James will give us the other angle of this. You all had Vladimir Guerrero Jr. as your number one first baseman. I was the only one that kept Freddie Freeman. Jack, give us the argument for why Vladito is now the number one.
I think Vladdy is probably a top three bat in all of baseball right now. I think he probably is just outside the top 10 just because he plays first base. So, like, obviously that, like, is value to play lower, but he definitely a case to be a top 10 player. 166 weighted runs created plus 6.7 WAR, 4.01 on base. Obviously the 48 dingers is the eye-opening stat. Definitely a breakout year for Vladito. I think he's going to be on his age 23 season. I think he cleared the number one spot for almost unanimously on the pod. I think he's terrorized the Yankees the entire year. He's an excellent bat. I think he made the entire Blue Jays lineup better. He's probably also part of the reason why Marcus Semien also broke out in his first season with the Blue Jays. He's just a power contact threat. There's nothing more you could say about Vladimir Guerrero. He's just one of the best offensive players in the league.
Yeah, I mean, he just rakes. That's really all that needs to be said. He sees baseball. He hits baseball. It goes a very long way. I just think you just keep it as simple as that with Vladito.
Ryan, you got anything?
I certainly agree. I mean, I don't have anything too unique outside of that. Just the fact that, I mean, we all kind of knew this was coming. Some people were kind of skeptical after his first two seasons, but a lot of people held out hope and he finally did emerge as this superstar. And I think that we can kind of, maybe not to the degree of this season, because he almost won the Triple Crown this year. He, outside of Shohei Ohtani, he easily would have won the AL MVP. But yeah, I just think that knowing that he finally was able to produce in this way just boosts him above Freddie Freeman because now we know what his ceiling is versus Freddie Freeman, who's more of like a consistency guy. While he does have his ups and downs, Freddie Freeman stays more consistent versus Vladdy, who is more of a ceiling guy.
Now, before I make this argument, I just want you to remember, I did put Vladimir Guerrero at number two. So it's not like I'm saying he's horrific, he's bad, he's a bust. But yes, you can see on your screen Luke Voit right now. And that's because when you think about Luke Voit, he was like a top player coming out of last season. He led the league in homers in 2020 with 22. And yes, that was a shortened MLB season, but everyone thought he was legit. We can go back to last year's list and everyone had him in that like five-ish range. And now, as you just saw, none of us have him in the top 10 right now. Now, am I saying, is Vladdy going to turn into Luke Voit? Probably not, because Voit was a random pickup that the Yankees got in exchange for Chase and Shreve at a deadline move that everyone just like scoffed at and said, okay, nice little minor leaguer deal. Vladimir Guerrero was obviously a top prospect back then. But if you're saying that, after one really good year, we made the mistake, and yes, it's probably a mistake, of putting Luke Voit into our top 10, top five. I'm not ready to put Vladimir Guerrero number one over Freddie Freeman, who has been an MVP in 2020, is, as Ryan said, Mr. Consistency, led the league in hits a couple of years ago, always a triple crown threat, except for homers, but he still puts up like 30 homers a year, which isn't bad at all. He has the MVP that we talked about, the five-time All-Star. He's a free agent right now sitting out there, and a little surprising that the Braves haven't locked him out just yet, because he is probably the next Chipper Jones on that organization. But in general, I'm just not ready yet to put Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in that number one spot. And of course, Vladdy could prove me wrong. He could definitely, I see a world where he outperforms Freddie in 2022. And then I think there's a really good argument for him to be number one. But for now, I'm not throwing out years of Freddie Freeman being that easy number one pick just yet. Maybe that's wrong, but I don't know. As you're going to see with my list, I have Joey Votto on there. I have Paul Goldschmidt on there. So consistency over years definitely means something to me.
One thing I'll say, though, about your comparison between, like, Voit versus Guerrero, like, I think it's not really apples to apples, because Voit, I would say the talent is still there. It was just with the limited, amount of time he had to play because of his injuries. He did show he was still that guy who put up, you know, like, 1,000 OPS. He led the league in homers in the shortened 2020 season. But with Guerrero, you know, he played every single game but one, where the Blue Jays had to tape him to the bench. Like, he clearly showed throughout the entire year he's the guy, you know, probably the best offensive player in the entire league for the entire season last year. And he's 10 years younger than Freddie Freeman. Well, yes, Freddie Freeman's been consistent. He's definitely, I think, without a doubt, top three. Very good case for him to be the number two first baseman. To say that a guy who's not even in his prime yet, who just clearly outslugged him, is, I think, to devalue that just because of, like, you know, his limited playing time, I don't really see. But I get your point that Freddie Freeman definitely has been a stud he's played in the league for almost 10 years now. So definitely a great hitter there.
Yeah, another rebuttal I would kind of have to that is that Vladdy was like, basically the second he was signed was the second coming of his father, obviously, Vladimir Guerrero Sr., the Hall of Famer. He's a guy who hit 400 in minor leagues, in the upper levels of the minor leagues, came up, was like so highly acclaimed. And I don't think you can compare that as just apples to apples with Luke Voit, just because like, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was like in line with the other guys like Juan Soto, Fernando Tatis, and Ronald Acuña Jr. as like the star players of this generation. And him having a breakout season, I think, is much different to somebody like Lou Voit having a breakout season. Because I think historically we see a lot more consistency with guys who were top prospects, such as like Mike Trout a decade ago. You would probably go back in hindsight and say that his 2011 runner-up finish in the AL MVP voting was not a fluke. So that's what I would say.
Jack sort of snuck this in at the end of his point, is that you could make a good argument for Freddie Freeman at number two. James and Ryan both had him as their number two. Instead, Jack went a different direction. Maybe it's the Yankee fan. Maybe it's the defense. Maybe it's the breakout 2021. Matt Olson was his number two first baseman. Jack, why don't you give your explanation there?
Obviously, I think Olson and Freeman offensively had pretty similar years. Maybe Olson gets a slight edge. Just last season, he had, you know, 11 points higher on his OPS plus. They had very similar weighted on base. On base percentage, Freeman gets a slight nod versus slugging. It goes to Olson. And then the other thing I'll mention is that I would say Olson, especially last year, was the premier defensive first baseman in the entire MLB, versus obviously Freddie. He's no bum over like picking it at first, but I'd say Olson gets a slight edge. I partially valued Olson because, like, while lots of you I see valued the consistency from Freeman, Olson's just entering his prime, and he showed us a glimpse back in 2019 that he could be this hitter. 2020, not so great for him, but then 2021, he really showed that he is going to be, you know, a force to be reckoned with. And obviously, I hope that he gets traded over to my Yankees once this lockout ends, but I did not let that factor into my ranking. Olson's only 27. He's about to enter, you know, the threshold that we call like their prime for his hitter. So we could even see him, you know, surpass these numbers he had this past year. Versus Freeman, he's probably, while he's been this Mr. Consistency for so long, he might be starting to end on, because father time, obviously, he is only 33. So is a little bit a ways end, but that's why I gave Olson the slight edge over Freddie.
I mean, you did say no bias, but
I just think that's horrible. Yeah, I agree with you, Dylan. Just Terrible. Bad take.
I think the age, I don't really think you can use the age argument personally for Freddie Freeman. Just
Freeman's only 30. He's not that old.
33. He's 32. But
first base is no wear and tear. Catch the ball, hit the ball.
That's what I would say. First base, although he is like more defensively inclined, which I guess could like cause injuries, I suppose. First base is you're not going to get injured like you would out in the outfield or shortstop or catcher or something like that. And also the way that he approaches the plate as a first baseman, he doesn't look for power. Obviously, power naturally comes to him as a pretty big dude. So he'll hit you 30, 35 home runs in a year. But even if his power production goes down to 20, 25 home runs, I still think that you'll see the consistency over the next 4 or 5 years where he'll be hitting in the 300 to 320 range, drive you in 100 runs, especially in that Atlanta lineup, and will definitely still be consistent in those areas, even if power doesn't come into play.
All right, so
this past season wasn't even Olsen's best offensive season, so I don't really see how you could rank him ahead. No, for Olsen, it wasn't even his best offensive season. Olsen's best offensive year was 2018 or 2017.
2017.
Go pull it back up.
No.
Uh oh. All right.
I think you're mistaken.
All right, but
2017. I have. Baseball
2017, he had 260, 25 homers.
That was 60 games, 59 games to be exact. This year, he had 156 this year he, games.
156 games.
How many homers did he hit in 60 games?
25. Which is pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, he's hitting a home run every like 2.5 games. That is by far his best offensive year.
Also, it's a small sample size. Like, I think if it depends on what, because like, obviously, now if you do what he did over 156 versus only 60. I think you value this.
Yeah, he would have broken Bonds' home run record if he played 162 games that year. You're exactly correct, Stop. If he played 162 that year, that's 75.
I don't think you can apply multiplication to home run totals to find out if he would have broken the record.
Especially with a player like Matt Olson, because Matt Olson often gets off to hot starts like that. However,
I don't think Matt Olson has ever hit 25 homers in 60 games besides that one year.
He's gotten really hot in a lot of early seasons, and then he's a very hot and cold player.
I don't really have a
month of July, and then August to literally be like the worst hitter in baseball.
I understood that you have Freeman over, but I think Olsen's. I mean, you have him at number 3 on your list. I wouldn't devalue his offensive production, especially in a better lineup, is top.
It's like Vlad. Everyone watching on the YouTube can see this. It's like Vlad, Freeman, Olsen. Like, there's levels. There's levels to this.
I would say there's a bigger gap between Guerrero and Freeman.
No! Oh, my goodness. No.
All right, so two quick questions. Question one and one word answers only. Question one is, who would you want to be the Yankees' everyday first baseman next year? And then the second question is, who is actually going to be the everyday first baseman? We'll go Jack, Ryan, James, one word answer for both questions.
Oh. Everyone, meaning I get to pick out of the entire pool.
You can't say Guerrero, but like of the guys that are out there for trade for free agency.
I'm going to say Olsen just because if you're locking him up for multiple years, I'd rather lock up a 27-year-old than a 33-year-old.
Okay, and the actual?
Yeah. That would Olsen. Be my argument.
Are you saying both? You're saying that they are going to get him?
Yes.
All right, someone break the monotony. James.
Oh, what did Barry say?
He said Olsen for both.
I didn't say Olsen for both. I would have to think about the second option. I would say Olsen, same argument as Jack. I'd rather sign a 27-year-old Matt Olsen to a longer contract versus Freddie Freeman. But who I actually think it'll be, honestly, knowing like Brian Cashman, is probably going to be like Luke Boyd on like one line.
All right, I would rather I would much rather have Freddie Freeman. It's not even close. I would not like another Joey Gallo in Yankee Stadium. No, thank you. I'll take Freddie Freeman. I'll sign him to 6 or 7 years. I don't care if he's 40 years old. I'll take him. If you're going to sign Garrett Cole to be that old, might as well sign Freddie Freeman to be that old. And then who I think they're actually going to get, they're probably going to get Matt Olson, and he's going to stink it up, and Yankees fans are going to hate him. Because he's going to hit like 220 like Joey Gallo, hit like a couple balls out of the park to the short porch, And then, like, once it comes playoff time, he's going to go 0-for-4 with 4 Ks in the wild card game. And then the Yankees won't get to play baseball until next April. So that's
could have built up resentment for Joey Gallo there.
I mean, yeah, he couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat for like 2 months.
That's going to be a fun argument. Jack is the biggest Joey Gallo supporter. Can't wait for the left fielder episode. One of the teams that
walks.
One of the teams that has
the definition of a true outcome guy. Free true outcome guy.
Well, it's like 80% strikeouts, walks, or homers.
I mean, I'll take that.
Yeah, you know Joey Gallo.
If he gives us run production,
he walks at like a 16% clip, and he hits like 35 bombs. I'll take that any day.
Joey Gallo has more home runs than he does singles in his MLB career. Let that sink in.
Okay. Chicks dig the long ball.
I mean, I'll take 199 is bad, but I would.
It's bad. He's below the Mendoza line, Barry.
That's horrible. 38 home runs.
If Joey Gallo can hit 220 and hit 38 home runs, I would so gladly take that and walk at the rate that he does.
Double strikeouts of walks.
If you tell me right now, Joey Gallo.
He didn't have 100 hits.
If you tell me right now, okay, he hits 170. I don't care if he hits 40 bombs.
Joey Gallo.
He can hit 170. If he hits 40 plus bombs, I will gladly take that.
Stop. Joey Gallo went to the plate 616 times, and he couldn't even get a hit one out of every 6 times he went to the plate.
He actually hit 160.
I remain in the fact that if Joey Gallo hits 220 with 35 plus home runs and 100 and over 100 walks, I don't care how much he strikes out.
I agree. If Joey Gallo is hitting 220,
and he's an elite defender,
if you tell me if Joey Gallo hits 200 with 40 bombs, I take that any day of the week.
Okay. Stop.
He's an elite defender any day of the week.
I want to go back every single year of the last World Series. Who on this year's Braves team struck out 100 plus? Or who on the Braves team this year struck out 180 times plus?
I don't care who on the Braves team hit 40 plus home runs. Outs are outs. We will discuss this later. Outs are outs. And Adam Duvall.
What was Adam average? Duvall, pull up Adam Duvall's stats. This debate does not stop here. Go to Duvall.
I think Duvall played enough to have 180 strikeouts. But guys like Duvall, sure Soler, and Jock Peterson all strike out a lot.
Go down.
Adam Duvall struck out 174 times.
He played 146 games.
He struck out 31% of the time.
He drove in 113 runs. I don't care. Non-valid argument.
All right, this will continue when we do the left fielders in a couple of weeks. Although we could pretty much apply the same argument to my number three first baseman, Pete Alonso, that he's going to strike out, but he's going to hit for a ton of power. So if Jack was just arguing for the moon for Joey Gallo, you sort of have to say the same thing about the guy that led the MLB in homers in 2019, finished third in the National League in 2021, and in a shortened season still managed to hit 16 homers. I mean, Pete Alonso is your consistency, this generation's version of Harmon Killebrew. No, I'm getting silent. And Barry, you can't laugh because when we did that episode a while ago about like historical comparisons, you love that one, that Pete Alonso's are Harmon Killebrew. So no chuck
over you. Alonso's a very good player. I just say that he's the fifth best offensive player behind Muncy, Goldschmidt, Freeman, Olson, Guerrero.
I'm expecting Pete to have a big season, 40 plus homers. In
2022. Oh, yeah. Don't trust me. Pete's big. Pete's very big. He'll eat a lot of food. New York probably isn't the best place for Pete Alonso to be playing. I mean, he's already weighing 245.
Hey, James, how many career home runs do you have in the major leagues?
Well, I am not eligible to play in the major leagues right now. I have one less home run than Bartolo Colon in the major leagues. That's what I have.
All right.
But yeah, Pete Alonso needs to lose weight. Then maybe he wouldn't strike out as much.
6'3", 2'4".
Anyone can.
Aaron Judge was like 280.
Aaron Judge is also 6'7".
I don't think you can compare the body type.
4 inches, 40 pounds.
Aaron Judge is also.
I mean, yes, Pete Alonso has a beer belly. More fat versus muscle, but. 6'3", 245.
Hey, I can respect a beer belly. I'm just saying, if Alonso wants to hit more bombs, he needs to lose a couple pounds. Vladdy loses 30 pounds, hits 48 bombs. I mean,
he'll hit the ball in the air more.
Yeah.
Vlad?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's lighting the ball on the ground is bad.
He didn't suck, but that was the reason he wasn't like elite. It was because all he did was hit the ball on the ground.
2020, he was pretty
because
bad,
he hit it hard. He hit it really
on the ground.
Hard.
That's what DJ LeMahieu did this past year too. He hit it hard and then on the ground every time for a routine ground ball.
Here at CyberTide, we don't use advanced analytics. We use gut size to determine our top first baseman.
Look at this. 6'3", 220, 25 pounds less than Pete Alonso. Look at that average. Look at that war.
For people who can't tell, we are referring to Paul Goldschmidt now, who most of us had in our top 10s around that 4-6 range. Is there much to talk about with him, or is he just your stereotypical really solid first baseman with the glove, with the bat?
I mean, yeah, he rakes.
He's
like, I mean,
he's better than really solid. He's probably, I think he was top five on my list. I don't know where James and Barry definitely both had him very high.
Yeah,
Dylan, you had him at number six.
I had him at six. Like,
I think he's in the same air as Freddie Freeman. Those two have definitely been the top two shortstops of the past decade, in my
first baseman.
Jesus Christ, first baseman of the decade. But yeah, I would definitely say that he's in that same air as Freddie Freeman, and definitely had a good bounce back season in his second year in St. Louis. Really got more comfortable, I think.
Yeah, and he had 12 stolen bags. I mean, he's a threat on the base paths. It's a big time.
Yeah,
big time plus
from first base.
He feels like the Real Muto of this position, that he's going to be consistent. He's going to do his thing. He's going to be 5-2-0 sort of thing.
And he's going to be quiet.
Yeah.
Like, no one's going to know that Paul Goldschmidt just hit 298 with 30 bombs.
Another guy that Ryan and I had on our list, James and Jack, left off of theirs is Jose Abreu. And this is one of your stereotypical guys that doesn't do well with the advanced analytics. But when you look at his stat line at the end of every year, he's hitting 30 homers. He's knocking 110, 115 RBI. So I had to include him on there just for that. He won the MVP in 2020. So are you really going to tell me that?
2020, that means nothing.
That doesn't count.
60 games, it doesn't count.
As somebody who had anything. Him on his list, that doesn't
his
count.
OPS wasn't even 1,000. Doesn't even count.
In 60 games.
Look at his stats, though. Look, on average, 162 game average of 33 home runs and 115 RBIs with the 290 batting average. Give me that every day.
He's a good hitter. It's just I'd say there are 10 first basemen who are better at it than him, and it's a loaded position.
Honestly, he's more of a DH than a first baseman. I mean, like, let's just be real. He's not very athletic. And he
I would say that about more than half of the list.
Let's
be honest.
No, but I'm just saying that like I think it's about time for him to, you know, scoot over to the designated hitter role. I mean,
yeah, but the White Sox kind of have a problem there with Eloy as well because he's a DH. And
yeah,
especially if you remember that one Eloy in that one game against Milwaukee, right? Was that Milwaukee where you just had like probably the worst defensive fumble I've ever seen in my life?
Probably.
Including playing Regis JV baseball.
All right. Another guy that we all had towards the middle of our list that kind of hard to rank considering he has this big labrum surgery this past offseason is Max Muncy. What did you guys think about him? Ryan, we'll go to you first.
Yeah. I mean, he's just a stud. One thing that's, I guess you could consider or not consider is that he does provide a lot of versatility out of the first base position. He can play second base. He can play third base, three of the four positions in the infield, not including catcher. So that's kind of important, as well as the fact that he just crushes the baseball. He's been a mainstay in that Dodgers lineup, who you can still probably argue is the best team in baseball. Put up this year, 895 OPS, got some MVP buzz, 2020, whatever, we can discard that for a lot of guys. The two seasons prior, 889, 973. I mean, he's just ridiculous. And the Dodgers are, I love the Dodgers and I hate the Dodgers. I hate them because Andrew Friedman and that managing like staff is so good at what they do that it's ridiculous that they can find a guy like Max Muncy, who for the next 4 years for their team after picking him up on a minor league contract from the Oakland A's, will produce that. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, anything you guys have on Monty?
I think he's probably top four without the injury. I think I gave Goldschmidt the nod over him just because he tore his, you know, his torn UCL. But like Barry said, we don't know if, like, you know, if the Dodgers want to go make a push for Story or Correa, then maybe he stays at first base versus, you know, if you want to have Trey Turner stay at short, then you move Muncy to second. So we don't know. if they're going to have him slotted over at a different spot. But it seems like now, amongst the first baseman, he definitely, without question, is top five, probably top four if he's fully healthy right now.
All right, and then another guy James had towards the bottom of his list that a lot of us tried to fit on. This is, of course, the bounce-back season of Joey Votto. It wasn't to the extent that Buster Posey did, as we talked about in our last episode. You can check out. Posey would have been a solid top five bounce-back catcher now in the league. Joey Votto had a similar situation that he's kind of fallen off the cliff the past couple of seasons. He bounced back in a solid way. He did get injured, but his first half was pretty solid. He ended the year hitting .266 in OPS plus of 136. So, James, what did you think about Joey Votto's bounce back?
I mean, yeah, he had a monster season for a 38-year-old. I mean, 36 home runs, almost like a 940 OPS. I mean, that's incredible. I mean, you couldn't ask much more production from a 38-year-old guy. And, yeah, it was an impressive season for Votto. I mean, look at the last couple of seasons. He hadn't hit above 280 the last 2 years. He went 226 in 2020, 261 in 2019, and then to have a 266 average with a 100-point higher OBP, I mean, it was just a monster season for Votto, so that's why he got onto my list in the top 10.
Do we expect him to repeat it? I think Brian's muted.
Sorry, I was just going to say, yes or no, is he a Hall of Famer? Just like yes. Basic yes or no, not no other arguments.
Yes.
Borderline, probably. I mean, it's a lifetime 300 hitter. So, yeah, I'd say, yeah.
Jack, any comments?
I'm going to say yes.
He's almost at 400 home runs. So, I'd say, yeah.
I mean, I'd have to research this more, but is he similar to Fred McGriff in that he's never been like the best of the best, but has an overall solid career and Fred McGriff didn't get in? So, could Joey Votto fall into that category?
Five-time All-Star World Series champ. How many home
runs? Oh, wow. If Fred McGriff had seven more home runs, he would be a Hall of Famer, which is kind of stupid. But
I think Fred McGriff. I think Fred McGriff should be in. Dylan, can you scroll down to his Kroll stats?
Mm-hmm. Fred McGriff has 2,500 hits with 500.
Votto has basically. Votto has a higher OPS plus, and
what's Votto's career WAR?
Votto's gonna end up being eligible for the Hall of Fame, I think, at the best time for him because he's an on-base advanced analytics type of guy that is going to end up getting voted in at some point.
He's 12 points higher in WAR, so I'd say he probably gets into the 60.
If you clear the 60 benchmark, you have a good chance. So, yeah, I would say yes.
I think there's one guy on everyone's list that I think everyone else kind of disrespected a little bit, and I had him kind of higher on my list, Yuli Gurriel, the American League batting champion. Just for everyone. I think everyone's kind of sleeping on him a little bit. Y'all should have had him a little higher in y'all's list. I mean, he was a gold glover. He was the batting champion this year. Like,
he hit 15 home runs at an offensively loaded position. So I think having bottom 10 is pretty fair. And so, yeah.
But he gets on base.
Oh, here we go.
Lots of these guys.
But he gets hits.
Lots of these guys.
And hits matter. Hits matter. Look, he had 169 hits.
I still had him on my list. I just don't think he deserves to be too high. I think he's a top 10 first baseman. But
yeah, I had him on my list as well.
As Jack said, there are a lot of guys who the whole point of this position is basically just a hit. And a lot of guys.
When you're hitting 15 home runs a year, it's not.
Yeah, but he was also the gold glover at the position. And the
first base defense.
What do you mean? You just went on Matt Olson being a great defender.
The point is that he's a great defender, not that he won the gold glove. There's a difference between, he just got, the baseball writers, they did not do a great job with their gold glove selection.
Gold glove is the most broken stat ever. If you look at the actual defensive statistics, some really bad defenders have won gold gloves in the past.
Did Derek Jeter win a gold glove? Or are we not starting that argument?
He won five.
He probably did. Yeah,
five. He won five.
As a Yankees fan, objectively not the greatest defender.
No.
Carlos Correa would agree with you. All right, one final question I have. Two guys that we all left off our top 10. One a former Cub, now the current Cub first baseman, did you even consider putting Frank Schwindel or Anthony Rizzo on your top 10 list? Ryan's laughing right now. Frank Schwindel was my number 11.
You were the only person considering putting Frank Schwindel on their list.
Like, he raked, sure, but what? He played, he had like 20 games.
He's a 29-year-old rookie.
Yeah.
Like, no. I think you need larger sample size before I do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Who doesn't love Rizzo, good comeback story?
Rizzo, you know, I think his offensive numbers just weren't there. Like, and like even defense as the Yankees, that was like something he was known as. He was pretty subpar for the brief tenure he had with them. So no, neither of
go
those
back
guys.
To Schwindel. Go back to Schwindel.
Rizzo for me is more of like a 13 or 14 guy.
Dude, Schwindel. Schwindel could, I mean, he almost has as many hits as Joey Gallo, so I probably should have snuck him in on my list. I mean, there's a hole for him, and he's only 20 behind Gallo when he had like 400 less plate appearances. So I like him. Seems like a great player. I mean, 56 games, he really put up some numbers. 64 games this year, he hit 14 home runs. I mean, yeah, looks like he's a solid player. He probably, you know, I probably would have cracked him in at number 10 ahead of Ty France. If I had seen these numbers,
if I had to put a bet on Joey Gallo or Frank Schwindel having a higher WAR,
I would bet the mortgage on Joey Gallo.
Wait, are we putting
I would refinance my house that I don't have.
Because remember, 2022, we're now taking sound bites and writing down our predictions. If you had to rank Anthony Rizzo or Frank Schwindel, we'll do WAR, we'll do batting average. We need a third status, a tiebreaker.
WRC plus.
WRC plus. No, OPS plus. I'm like that.
Okay, same. Okay.
They're OPS the same plus. Thing, basically.
Whatever.
Okay, OPS plus.
OPS plus, home runs, and WAR. Anthony Rizzo, Frank Schwindel. Who takes
Anthony Rizzo beats him in all three.
Schwindel beats him in all three.
I kind of want to take Schwindel.
Let's go.
I'll give Rizzo for OPS plus, Schwindel for the other two somehow.
At that, I've convinced everyone to be a Frank Schwindel guy. I'm telling you,
we're Schwindelites.
Frank Schwindel will be a top 10 first baseman next year.
No,
that's my bold prediction for this episode. David's not here. Okay. David's episode will be or David's list will appear on the website for those of you who are wondering, and he will make an appearance towards the end of this series where he'll come on and talk about his thing. You can find his catcher's article as well on the website, as well as a lot of other content. That website is linked to our Twitter page. You can find our Twitter at SideRetiredPod. James is already eyeing it. You're not saying it this episode.
What?
you can also find the YouTube is also SideRetiredPod. The website is still under construction. Eventually, it's going to have the URL SideRetiredPod.com. But we're still tonight. That's the goal. That we get that done tonight. Well, actually, by the time you hear this episode,
it'll be done.
Fingers crossed. James is going to have the Instagram up and running by the time this episode launches. There's the challenge. James just gave a massive, like, eyes up, like, what the heck just happened? Yeah, the Instagram will be up and running by the time this episode comes out.
Whoa! Okay, okay.
Yeah,
just, we can do that.
It's just the click of a button away. So, James, Jack, Ryan.
That's a lot harder of a task on a website.
The return of Ryan. Yeah, exactly. Jack produced a website at the time it took James to produce an Instagram account.
But, I have the account. Like, I can literally pull it.
Yeah.
All right, Ryan's back on for today. Thank you for joining us for the first time since September 13th.
I will go back and listen to literally every single episode in October. I guarantee you I was in one of them.
All righty. Well, for James, Jack, Dylan, and Ryan, the side is officially retired.